This is Chris Bleck on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Bleck and Abdallah podcast. It's presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Blatton Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. You can also watch us on Twitch. We're live right now, ESPN 1000 Chicago. The chat is hot. I mean, like what people
popping.
Are, yeah,
they're it's popping.
They love that last segment.
People keep saying free Bleck,
I'm right here.
Bleck is here. He took days off because we have days off. Like, we're still working. We still have vacation days. Like, Chris just took two. Spoiler alert. I'm gonna be taking some too. I'll still come in and do the show with you.
That's how we're starting an
because
hour.
Because I like doing shows with you. You said it's popping. I'm saying people. I want to know why people think that you're like suspended. You were suspended from Twitter for a little bit earlier today.
Yeah, that's true.
But people are acting like you're in jail.
I don't know if people have noticed this tonight. If you have tweeted something that has music from Universal Music Group in it, Twitter is going after you tonight. I thought I was the only one. There was a TikTok video that I posted from a while back of my dog that apparently the Universal Music Group is not happy with. So they took it down and then they sent me through this whole thing that I had to go through to get my account back up. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's what they're doing tonight. You've noticed that many other famous people are complaining about this,
well,
right?
Well, listen, you wanted to be a TikTok queen and they wouldn't let you. And now you're upset. I get it.
I really don't care.
It's the Universal Music Group, and they are taking down if you are using their music. So you used a song by The Weeknd, and
took it down.
And The Weeknd said no.
That's it.
No, thank you.
Took it down.
No, thank you.
Let me ask you about this. Did you hear this audio from yesterday from David Falk, the great agent for Michael Jordan from back in the day? He was talking about, he was on a radio station. I have it here. The radio station is 106.7 The Fan out in the D.C. area. He was on the show talking about Jordan in today's game. I thought this is interesting. Let's hear from David Falk.
I think LeBron's a great player. I think Kevin Durant's a great player. But I don't think there'll ever be a player that has the talent, the drive, the family, the college pedigree. I mean, he had everything. If you're going to recreate science, if you're going to put Michael in the laboratory, it would take a bolt of lightning to energize the mix to recreate him. I don't think there'll ever be another Michael Jordan. To be a lot of great players, and there have been a lot of great players, and Michael, because he's so comfortable in his own skin, totally defies all the comparisons with everyone that people wants to compare him to. That's why he's so smart. He doesn't want to get involved in these mono comparisons. You're comparing different eras, different rules. I think if Michael played in today's rules with no hand checking, I think he'd average between 50 and 60 a game.
Did you hear that the other day? 50 and 60 a game.
Mm-hmm.
His old agent, David Falk, that's what he thinks Michael Jordan would do in today's game.
Well, Waddle and Sylvie also had on Tim Grover, who was Jordan's trainer, and said if that Jordan, like they were using, like they didn't have foam rollers. They were using PVC pipe.
Right.
You know, like they didn't have the technology. He would watch his games and track his steps to know, like, you favored your left side this game. You favored your right side this game. So we need to work more on this side, you know, like that kind of stuff. He was writing it down by hand. If Jordan would have had the technology that guys like LeBron, guys like Durant, guys like LeBron spends over $1 million a year of his own money just on his body, like rehab and everything. And that's why he's been able to play at such a high level and not be injured for so long. If Jordan had and the only major injury Jordan really had is when he broke his foot early in his career. Like he never really had like any major injuries besides that. So to say that he would have been that much better with the current rules and with the current technology and with the current health stuff that we have, you know, all of the information about diet and nutrition. And think of it, we learned from The Last Dance, he didn't start lifting weights until just to get past the Pistons.
Yeah.
Like he didn't even think about lifting weights until then. you know, because he didn't, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know the reason, he just said he didn't want to lift weights. So I feel like if he would have had the technology and that kind of thing, I don't see why he couldn't have, I don't know if he would have averaged 50 or 60 points, but he would have put up a lot more numbers than he did, even though his numbers were already outrageous.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like we get into this conversation, this social conversation in basketball, where there's a certain percentage of people who automatically want to discredit what's taking place in today's NBA, and then they automatically think that everything was much better back in the early 90s when the Bulls were winning titles. Mm-hmm. Jordan was. I don't know if you can really make that same argument for a lot of the other stuff that's going on at that time. Like, if someone says, yeah, but they played a different brand, you couldn't go in the lane because you got an elbow to the face.
That's stupid.
Okay, you can say that, but a part of the reason to why there were 15 elbows in the lane at the same time was because every person on the court was standing in the lane on an offensive possession.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, just by natural spacing, you are going to have more limbs, more people, less movement,
mm-hmm.
all compact into one spot. So when Jordan went into the lane, he had to go past four different defenders. I'm giving Jordan credit for that, for accomplishing it that in that time. I think another thing we do is that we hear David Falk say he would average 50 to 60 in today's game. I'm not going to qualify that as like a hot take, because I don't think he's far off. I don't think he would get to 50 or 60 a game, but he certainly could score 40. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities. I mean, if you look at Jordan in 87, he averaged 37 points per game while playing 40 minutes a night and attempting 27 shots per game. So like Michael Jordan could get to that 40 point per game for an entire season in today's game. I don't think 50 or 60 is actually realistic, but I don't think there's a doubt that he would be the absolute best player in today's game. Without a doubt. That's not even a conversation point.
I think that he, because of his willingness and want to be so good on the defensive end, would make him the best player right now. Like, we see prolific scorers like James Harden, you know, like Steph Curry. You and I are going to do the Bulls backstory here in about 20 minutes, and it's going to be about the shrug game where Jordan couldn't miss a three. Well, if you look at the box score, he hit six threes. Like, that's nothing, right, by today's standard. So I would be interested in seeing the adjustment he would make to today's game where it's so three-point conscious, right? Like, I would like to see if he, because every year he got better at something. Every year he picked on something from his game and he tried to improve on it. I would like to see how much more he could score if the three-point shot was implemented more during that time period.
Yeah, and listen, if a great player was playing in the 70s, 80s, early 90s, that great player is going, there's a reason that great player got to the point that they were at that time. So if they were going to get to that point in their career during this time, they would implement the tools that they have now.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So like someone else, Scottie Pippen, playing in today's game would be one of the best players in the league.
He's the one that you could place without adjusting anything to his game.
Yeah.
He's the one that you could take from the 90s and put into today's game because of what he did defensively and his tools offensively, how he got to the basket. You could put him in right now.
Well, it's really him and Jordan.
Yeah.
Jordan and Pippen immediately transcend the different styles of basketball. It doesn't matter. When they got older, they slowed it down. They manipulated the way that they mm-hmm. played offense. They stopped the defense on the way that they played. And then also, if you go to young 90s Bulls, Jordan and Pippen defensively, full court, trapping, being the two that hustle the most on the court, like that translates no matter the era that you're talking about.
The one guy that I don't think would, because even the best defensive guys can score now, is Rodman.
Well, he would have to...
Your specialty
He would translate, because we still talk about Draymond Green having
Draymond can score.
Immense impact on the game.
But Draymond can score.
Yeah, but Rodman was a better defender.
I understand that.
He was a better defender and a better rebounder, so like those skills are heightened. And like we don't have to go back so far to find Ben Wallace. Ben Wallace is the same style of player, not
That's a big man, though.
Yeah, but, I mean, listen, Ben Wallace was, what, 6'8"? Like he was a center, and people thought he was bigger than he was because he had the afro, right?
True.
He would stand next to Shaquille O'Neal in those in the finals, he's not really like Rasheed Wallace is probably taller, but he's the power forward,
and
Ben Wallace is the center, but like, you know, those style of players, even Joakim Noah, even though he was a true center, his style of play was, he doesn't really give you a whole lot offensively outside of passing, but he is there as an irritant, a defender, a rebounder, a block shot guy. That's what he does. That's his specialty. So, like, those guys will always translate. But I think when you look at a guy like, you know, what would Reggie Miller be in today's NBA? He would have to be a better three-point shooter, right? He's one of the all-time greats. But, like, can he just stand on the perimeter and shoot threes? He probably could, right? Yeah. So he would be someone that would probably have more value. How about someone like Kevin Johnson? How does Kevin Johnson translate to the next level if he's only a slashing guard trying to get to the rim? So, like, the conversation's always fun, and I think it's interesting that now with The Last Dance going on, we can look at something like Michael Jordan, and you hear his agent suggest that he could score 50 and 60 per game, and it's like, all right, he probably couldn't do that, but he probably could give you 40 a night. Like, that, it wouldn't shock me at all. And, like, James Harden getting 34 a game this season, Jordan would easily be the number one scorer in the league.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think he'd be fine. I think he'd adapt to this league because the greats always adapt. Like, the greats could always find a way to win. You know, like, they're, like, we've been going through the Bulls games, and we've seen, you know, well, if Jordan didn't have a good offensive night, he had a lot of assists. If he didn't have a good, you know, if he wasn't hitting shots, he had a lot of rebounds. Like, he was playing defense all the time. Like,
right.
He would adjust to whatever the game and whatever kind of team that they were playing against. So, you know, to say that he wouldn't be able to play in this era, or to say that he wouldn't be able to average more points than he did, doesn't make sense to me. As someone who hasn't coached basketball, I think he would be fine in the modern era.
Calling back to a caller earlier that challenged you on your Jim Boylan thoughts and then suggested his thoughts were better than yours because he has coached high school basketball and you have not.
You know what? Coaches never think it's them, do they?
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, I wonder if he's calling the bogus timeouts for his high school squad. You think that he's doing that on the sidelines?
Look, a lot of respect to him, but I just, if you don't think Boylan's a problem, then I don't know what you're watching.
The Bulls made some news today because Mark Eversley was introduced via teleconference to the Chicago media. Keith Pompey from the Philadelphia Inquirer, he's their 76ers reporter. He has covered Mark Eversley for some time in Philadelphia. He will join us next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. It's Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Mark Eversley was named the Bulls' new GM. He had a teleconference with the Bulls and the Chicago media today. Here's Eversley on his plan to get the Bulls organization back to winning.
One of my mottos is players first. I think you have to create a players first mentality. You know, we were the second youngest team in the NBA last year, and I really believe it starts with a foundation of player development. Through player development, you know, that's really when we can see what kind of players we have on our roster. You know, I was surprised to find that, you know, there was one player development coach on the staff. You know, as I was doing my research for this job, you know, that's a hell of a job for one person to take on. You know, it's going to be one of my tenets to try and figure out our player development system. You know, there's a lot of key areas within it, you know, skill development, physical development, mental enhancement. But with that, you need to hire people to help support that. So we're going to do, you know, a pretty diligent job in terms of looking for, you know, the proper staff to bring in here to work with our young guys. But player development is going to be a tremendous focus for this organization moving forward.
So that's Mark Eversley earlier today on teleconference. Black and Abdallah with you here on ESPN 1000.
I like that he also said, and we can play it too, I like that he also said that he wants to make the Bulls cool again. Like, and there's such a like a mentality that goes with that. Like, I know it's LeBron, but think of how cool the Cavs became to Cleveland. Like, they were a joke, right? And then LeBron, they draft LeBron. You know, he wins a championship, all that kind of stuff, comes back, all that good stuff. And then the Cavs became cool. Like, the Bulls, watching The Last Dance and everything, reminds everyone of how cool it was to be a Bulls fan and how great it was to be a part of, you know, going to games. Like, you and I used to go to games when there was no, before they got Derek.
Oh, yeah.
When there was nobody there. You know, in between the Jordan years and then in between that and then before they got Derek, it was empty.
Well,
and
I can remember going to Columbia College here in Chicago in the early 2000s, so between 2004 and 2007. And I remember going over to the United Center and buying like $10 tickets mm-hmm. to sit in the 300 level.
Mm-hmm.
Heck, I went sometimes by myself.
Yeah.
Like, I was that guy. Pretty cool. Pretty desirable to ladies out there when I was in college. I mean, I went to Bulls games by myself to watch Khalid Al-Amin and Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler.
We didn't have Netflix and chill back then.
No. But yeah, you're right. We used to go when before they were kind of cool. And then what the Bulls built with Derrick Rose, Jimmy Butler, Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, Taj Gibson, and that group, it really started to bubble up again as this is a desirable place. Here's Eversley's impression of the Bulls organization before he accepted the job.
I certainly did my research on the team. Obviously, winning 22 games this year is not ideally where you want to be. You know, I do think, you know, I'm going to be committed to, you know, I was committed to my role with the Sixers, so I didn't, you know, study them that intently. But when I did, you know, I noticed that, you know, they're not necessarily a strong rebounding team. You know, I don't think they shot it particularly well this year, but I do think there's areas of improvement, and we're committed to getting this, turning this program around. With respect to any other, you know, coaching and all that kind of stuff, again, it's really about, you know, getting to Chicago and doing a deep dive on all of the departments, including coaching staff, and, you know, really figuring out what the needs are and addressing them and then putting a plan in place against all of those needs.
So that's Mark Eversley earlier today on teleconference with the Chicago media, his introduction as Bulls GM. And really, if you're a Bulls fan, it should feel good. You finally have a fresh start. Whenever basketball picks back up, there will be a fresh start for this Bulls organization. And it's something that I think a lot of us have been calling for years. You know, when this team was 41-41 in the eighth spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs with Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo was here, it just felt like this was a tired act. They needed a fresh restart then. And what took place over the course of the next 2 years to follow that point was a lot of half measures.
Mm-hmm.
It was never the Bulls organization taking a full swing at, okay, we need to remove the people in charge, or we need to go get the big name free agent. It was signing guys like Jabari Parker. It was making trades for Otto Porter Jr., which he is a decent player. The problem is that deal to trade for Porter Jr. immediately removed you from free agency last summer. Think back to last summer. So much movement around the NBA. One team was not involved in any of it. It was the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls had no say in any of the movement with all those stars. Stars going everywhere. A Paul George there. A Kawhi here. Kevin Durant there. Kyrie Irving here. All these guys move around the league. The Bulls had no part of it. Why? Because they removed their cap space. They took themselves out of the conversation by making the trade for Otto Porter. A lot of moves like that over the last couple of years have never really gotten the Bulls to the point where they were heading in the right direction. They were just trying to plug one hole on a sinking ship. And that's what they seem to do for multiple years in a row. Did I scare you there?
No. But if you look at Mark Eversley and what he did with Philly, right? He was hired there in 2016, but he, obviously, after the trust the process and all that kind of stuff, but still part of an organization that broke it down to the core and then built it back up. So what he did there, what he's learned from there, hopefully he can translate to the Bulls and, I mean, bring in some more personnel from player development guys.
Yeah, absolutely. So Chris Black, Adam Abdallah here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN Chicago app. So Mark Eversley was in Philadelphia previously, and he is now the new Bulls GM. Let's go to Keith Pompey from the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's our 76ers reporter. Follow him on Twitter, Pompey on Sixers. So Keith, in your time dealing with Mark Eversley, what would you kind of tell us in Chicago, the type of person we are getting to run the GM spot for the Chicago Bulls?
You know, it's weird. A lot of people are going to, and it's not a slight to him, but, you know, because typically when you talk about people, you first thing you talk about is, oh, he's a great basketball guy. But then when you come into Mark Eversley, like, the thing that stands out to you is that he's, like, a really an approachable guy. You know what I mean? He's, like, you know, he's 6'8", he's this and that, but he's really approachable and he's well-liked. And then you realize that, you know, that's enabled him to have, like, the relationships, you know, to go out there and sign free agents, to go out there and like, you know, be able to talk to people and find, you know, what really goes on behind, you know, guys that they scout, you know, goes on with, you know, and the people that they scout, what's on in their mind, what makes them tick. And so I would say when you meet Mark, you know, that's the one thing that's going to stand out to you. And then you realize that he, based on those relationships that he built, you know, he has a great eye for talent as well. So those are the things that really stand out to me. And it's not a knock. It's just that, you know, he's a nice guy and a lot of people like him and they gravitate towards him.
When he came to Philly, the foundation there was already established. But what did he add? What did he change? What did he bring to the organization when he got there in 2016?
You know, it was weird because, you know, you knew that he was Brian Colangelo's, like, right-hand man when he first came there. So it was kind of like you initially you thought, you know, some of the things that were happening was like Brian. And then when you had talked to people, you realize, well, you know, Mark was the guy who really, like, looked into this guy and realized things. Because the things that Mark does, like, if you don't ask him or if you don't ask other people, you really would think that he's not really doing much just because, you know, he's the type of guy who keeps that, like, low profile, so to speak. But really, it was a matter of, I mean, I will tell you this. You know, when his first year there, they really didn't have to do a lot of work because they had the first overall pick, and they went out there and they drafted Ben Simmons. And then, like, this past year, they won, and it was really Mark's doing. You know, they went out there and they got Matisse Thybulle. And a lot of people in Philadelphia was like, Matisse, who? Who are you talking about? Like, you going after this guy? And, you know, then you realize that, you know, this guy is arguably, you know, one of the late steals in the draft, like late first-round pick steals. And that's all because of Mark, you know. And then you do some research and you realize, you know, he was the guy who got DeMar DeRozan. You know, he was one of the first guys that said, I believe that Damon Lillard can be an all-star in this league. So, you know, initially that first year is hard to judge him because of Ben Simmons was going to be the pick. But then it's the other ways that he built the roster, the other free agents who came in there, and the relationships that he had with agents, you know.
Keith Pompey from the Philadelphia Inquirer joining Chris Black and Alba Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Yeah, Keith, we totally get that. And especially if you're a Bulls fan looking at this team going forward, you probably look at that and hear the stories that you just told us and say, man, I would like Damian Lillard on my team. Or what if Ben Simmons one day wants to get away from Joel Embiid? It seems like Mark Eversley has so many connections and deep connections to many stars around the league that that should benefit the Chicago Bulls in the long run.
Oh, it really should. And also because, you know, not only does he have relationships with the players, which are great, but a lot of the agents speak very highly of him. You know, I mean, they love Mark. And the thing is, you know, when you look at it, I mean, you look at the way this organization is now, you know, with you have a new vice president, you have a new general manager. And like you said, with Mark, there are going to be some free agents who are going to want to come here. You know, from the outside looking in, you know, people are saying, man, you don't want to go to Chicago right now early. You know, you don't want to go there. They have problems. They have this and that. And then when you bring in this new blood in the front office and you bring in a guy that has the type of relationships that he has, and then you realize, like, you know, Chicago is the third largest city in the country, you know, and it's one of those things where, I think that you guys are going to have some free agents coming your way, you know, this summer, next summer, what have you. You know, people are going to want to play for Mark Eversley.
I think you just caused a lot of joy around Chicago tonight on a Friday night. But as far as, you know, Arturis Karnišević has some connections to Adrian Griffin and other coaching potentials. What kind of connections does Eversley have to some of these potential coaches that could be looking for jobs, assuming what we all think is going to happen when Jim Boylan's out?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I mean, he does have some connections, but you just said Adrian Griffin. You know, I'm like one of these guys where, you know, I really don't like talking about, you know, coaches losing their jobs and stuff like that. But the fact that you just said Adrian Griffin, you know, I think that he is like one of the top young, you know, assistant coaches out there who can do it. And everything that I hear is people are saying they're raving over him. Like, if Boylan is out of there, I would be shocked if Griffin wasn't the next coach. That's just my opinion. So even though Mark Eversley has some connections, you know, we're talking about a guy, you know, Griffin, who's familiar with the organization. You know, he was a teammate of the vice president, you know, all this type of stuff. Like, I would be shocked if he wasn't the next coach. That's if Boylan is no longer here. So even though Eversley has connections, I think that, you know, that's the guy that's going to lead the Bulls if Boylan isn't here.
Yeah, we totally agree with you, Keith. One last one before we let you go. If you take a look at the 76ers, and I know there's a lot up in the air on how this current season's going to end or what will take place with the 2020 NBA season, but, like, what's the talk in Philadelphia been like with this team, sixth in the Eastern Conference, but clearly kind of struggling to the point where they had higher expectations than what they're playing at right now?
They underachieved. They really underachieved. I mean, like, when you look at it, you know, last year they say they lost by 4 bounces, you know, to Kawhi Leonard and the Toronto Raptors in the second round. And there was a lot of hype coming in. And you look at that team last year with Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick, they didn't re-sign those two. They brought in Al Horford, you know, and other guys. And this team just underachieved. I mean, they're not as good as last year's squad. So if they, you know, you think about it, if you're Brett Brown, the coach, you think that, okay, I got X amount of months to get this thing together if we resume the season. But if they don't resume the season, it's going to be a lot of, you know, a lot of heartbreak, a lot of disappointment because, you know, like you said, they're sixth in the East. You know, they were supposed to contend with the Milwaukee Bucks to go to the finals. I mean, they were supposed to battle right there with them, and they haven't done that. And they underachieve big time. So that, you know, that's what people are saying back here in Philadelphia.
Thank you, Keith. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Keith.
All right, thanks for having me, fellas.
That's Keith Pompeo from the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's their 76ers reporter. You can follow him on Twitter at Pompeo on Sixers. I've heard Adrian Griffin as a name as well to be the next Bulls head coach if they do something with Jim Boylan. I think that would be a home run hire. If you have Karnišević with Eversley and Griffin as your new, like, three guys running this organization, I don't think you could be asking anything more as a Bulls fan.
Dude,
that would be the best.
All relationships. It's all. It every
is.
Time he said, every time Keith said he's good with agents, he's good with, you know, all these players. The players, you might not get the players to come here because of money and all that kind of stuff. Well. But if you know the agents, you know everything.
Listen. The two names he put out there, he was there drafting Ben Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it and we've heard it in the past. There are rumors. He just said the disappointing season that the 76ers are having.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned another name that he does have a contract and he wants to stay in Portland. But Damian Lillard, if he ever got to the point where the Blazers are one of those teams, they've underachieved as well. And if he wants out somewhere, woo, baby!
Listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Uh-huh. Episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance will air on Sunday night on ESPN Television. Here on ESPN 1000, all of our coverage of The Last Dance is presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. So throughout The Last Dance, as it is playing on ESPN Television, Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000, each time we host a show, we have a segment called Bulls Backstory, and we've done this a couple of times now, and you can find the previous episodes on our podcast page on the ESPN Chicago app. And tonight's edition of Bulls Backstory, Abdallah, we will take a look at the Shrug Game. Michael Jordan in 1992, NBA Finals Game 1, Bulls and Portland Trailblazers. The Shrug Game as Michael Jordan goes off in the first half.
It'd be a great series. I mean, the series ended up being, you know, six games long, but this first game was a blowout, 122-89, Jordan with 39. And, you know, we were talking about a little bit earlier about how, oh, this is supposed to be like this great game from Michael Jordan. He hit all these threes. He hit six threes. Like, by normal...
In the moment, it was an NBA Finals record.
Yes.
Six threes, and a little-known fact, unless you go back and watch a game, he missed the first two.
Yeah.
Like imagine if he started the game off like he was Klay Thompson and hit 8-for-8 to start the game. Like, people really would have lost their minds, but it was cool in 1992 to see Michael Jordan going up against Clyde Drexler, and really the dynamic there of Drexler being the other really good shooting guard in the NBA. They were on the Dream Team together. They are two guys that came into the league at about the same time, Drexler a year before Jordan, and Drexler was the high-flying shooting guard who was the next guy to lead his team to a championship, right? It was him and Michael, and they were competing in the NBA Finals. Like we like to do here on Bulls Backstory here on ESPN 1000, we like to give you some samples from what it sounded like in the time. So the
this
NBA
is the best part.
Of course it is. The NBA on NBC was the television station running things for the NBA Finals, and the way they started these broadcasts were fantastic. They were Bob Costas welcoming us to the broadcast. Here it is on NBC television back in the day, game one of the NBA Finals.
It's clear now the most important game of the NBA's regular season was March 1st, Portland at Chicago. Not so much for the Bulls' easy victory, but rather for Phil Jackson's bold comment on the eve of the game.
I think this club, Portland, represents a team that plays in spurts, but they'll self-destruct.
The game was never close enough to test Jackson's theory. Chicago wrote a glaring overmatch at small forward, Scottie Pippen outscoring Jerome Kersey by 18 points in a 20-point blowout. And the point Michael Jordan made afterward stung all the more. The Bulls had publicly amplified 3 years' worth of doubt about this Portland franchise, and suddenly, what had been only whispered around the NBA was now spoken openly. Portland was good, but they lacked the resourcefulness and savvy to win close, important games. And so, for the past 3 months, the Blazers have endured daily questions, not about their shooting or their rebounding, but about their judgment and on-court leadership. Portland has protested occasionally, but the slander has been so caustic, so routine, that the Blazers now know they have only one effective reply.
Ah, there it is. Here comes the music. Round Ball Rock by Joe Tesh. So great. You know, and as a kid, you're sitting there watching the games, because we were little at the time, but like, yeah. This was the moment, right? Like, when that would hit after Costas read the intro, then you see the highlights, and then you're like, that, like, nothing to me says NBA basketball like that. Hearing the intro into the music hitting, so awesome.
Well, you have to understand, too. So, like, this is the finals, right? So, when I lived over...
Back to the intro.
Wait, hold on. Sorry, not to cut off Bob
Big
Costas.
Voices coming.
This is the NBA on NBC. The 1992 NBA Finals. Tonight, Game 1 between the Portland Trailblazers and the Chicago Bulls.
The Madhouse on Madison has become one of the most recognizable symbols of the city of broad shoulders. That, of course, was Carl Sandburg's description of Chicago. But in searching for a headline for this series, we might borrow from a literary figure of an earlier time, as both the Trailblazers and Bulls arrive here motivated and burdened by great expectations. Good evening, everyone. I'm Bob Costas. Welcome to the NBA Finals.
I mean, that's Costas on NBC back in the day. Like, that's MVP Bob Costas,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, throwing out there Carl Sandburg. I mean, that's in your intro? Like, really? Like, that's what you're like. You're working at an IQ level that's above many who are watching, sir. And I get it. Many know who Carl Sandburg is. But, like, literary figures within your intro for Bulls basketball against the Portland Trailblazers, game one of the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, baby, that was
mm-hmm.
good.
Mm-hmm. What I was saying before Bob Costas rudely interrupted me,
well,
or actually, I rudely interrupted
you
Bob
were.
Costas, and I'm
we
sorry.
We all do.
Is that I lived overseas during the first three-peat, and so we wouldn't get full games until the finals. So I would catch highlights, you know, on like some CNN sports update, like the, like, you know, when you go overseas or you go to like a hotel and you could see it, it's like the
yeah.
weird,
yeah.
like national CNN. So, or international CNN, I mean, we would get that and I'd get highlights of Jordan every once in a while, but we wouldn't get full games until the finals. So I wouldn't get to see full Michael Jordan games until the finals. So this was one of the first ones. And it's like, oh, this, the shrug game happened. You know, while I'm watching it on a VHS tape because I was staying up late and all that kind of stuff.
So we get the Costas intro, we get the John Tesh and the round ball rock, the NBA on NBC theme. Then we get to the game, the good stuff. Jordan hits 6 3-pointers in the first half, scores 35 points in game one of the NBA Finals in 1992.
That's his third three-point attempt, and he finally hits. Setting up Jordan, wide open for another three. Blazers get back. Pippen back for Jordan again for three. You know, Michael Jordan. Jordan for three. Well, Michael has gone to a new weapon. Rebounded by Grant.
That was that putback dunk by Jordan.
Here's Jordan for three! Yes! Did you see that look? Michael indicating he can't believe it.
Well, if you take those hurried shots, that's what's going to happen. The wings of the Chicago Bulls can open a game wide open. The defensive pressure, the steals, the transition game, and then Pippen taking it to the hole. Michael following it back up again, throws it down. He feels it. There's nothing else he can say other than the man feels it and lets us know.
So that's Mike Fratello with Marv Albert on the highlights there. There was one play in the highlight package that was not a three-point shot. It was after Pippen went in for the layup and Jordan put it back, mm-hmm. the slam dunk, mm-hmm. and then immediately mm-hmm. after, mm-hmm. another turnover, and Jordan hits that final 6 3-point shot in the first half and then gives you the famous shrug, which was outstanding. Here's Michael Jordan after the game with Ahmad Rashad.
Let's go to Ahmad, who has Michael Jordan alongside him.
All right, thanks, Marv. Michael, if you guys were trying to come out here and make a statement this evening, I'd say you did it with an exclamation point.
Well, I don't think you can make a statement in the finals. I mean, this is just one game, and one game doesn't make a final. But we wanted to get out of the block quick. We got to defend our home court, you know, because we got three games out there. So that can make a big difference if they come in and get one.
What about you in the first half? You shot 6 3-pointers, set a league record. You were in a zone.
I was in a zone. My threes felt like free throws, man. I really didn't know what I was doing, but I was taking them, and they was going in. So, you know, that really helped the game.
Must have been the working out we did this morning. All right, congratulations, Mike. Back to you, Marv.
Yes, that was the fine work done by Ahmad with Michael. And here is Michael after hitting a three-pointer, looking over at you, Magic, and giving the indication that he is bewildered by that hot shooting touch. We'll be back in a moment.
To be honest, I leave all these clips long because Marv Albert, even though he was in his prime, was super awkward with all of his throws and his digs that he's taking at his partners. Very awkward.
Funny he should mention the nod to Magic Johnson. I wonder why.
We will find out in the fifth and sixth episodes of The Last Dance, which will air this Sunday night. Here's a preview of the episodes that was released on ESPN earlier today, and Magic Johnson is involved in the clip.
Clyde the Glide says we're the two best in the game, but I'm not getting into a war of words with Mike.
Clyde was a threat. You know, I'm not saying he wasn't a threat, but me being compared to him, I took offense to that.
I'm working for NBC. I'm covering the finals. So the night before game one, we're at Michael's house playing cards. And he said, you know what's going to happen tomorrow. I'm going to give it to this dude.
And the matchup at the start, Michael Jordan facing Clyde Drexler. Jordan, the three-point land.
So he hit that first three. And then here come the second one. The third one. Michael didn't want anybody to have nothing over him.
So that was Magic Johnson and the episodes. They will air on Sunday, episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance.
And for the sneaker people out there, Jordan did that in the highly underrated Sevens. The Sevens are a nice pair of shoes. He did those in the black and true red ones. They are now, people often talk to them now, like they talk about them, they call them the Raptors, because if you look at them, little bit of purple in there. Little bit of purple.
They kind of are, and they're like the one throwback Jordan shoe that like you almost never see anyone wear.
Yeah, they released a couple colors of them, different colorways of them earlier this year, but you don't see a lot of Sevens out there for sure.
So the episodes will air on Sunday, and on Monday here on ESPN 1000, we'll have Last Dance Mondays, and it's presented to you by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
I'd like you to meet someone who's really special.
It's Black and Abdallah.
A real inspiration.
Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago.
Thank you to Sean Davis for producing tonight's show, and thank you to Keith Pompey from the Philadelphia Inquirer for joining us, talking about Mark Eversley, the new Bulls GM. You can download the podcast at the ESPN Chicago app. We will be back on Sunday from 8 to 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1000. A lot to discuss on Sunday. We'll have another edition of Bulls Backstory. I believe we will be taking a look at the flu game.
You don't believe. You know we will.
Michael Jordan, the flu game, will be on Bulls Backstory on Sunday morning.
I think a little birdie has told me we're going to talk about the flu game. No, you know what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the flu game.
I was trying to build it up like there was suspense.
There's no suspense. You just tell them we're going to talk about the flu game.
Well, we will talk about the flu game.
Hold on. I'll do this for the Twitch people.
Yeah, go ahead.
The flu game.
Oh, are we going to dive into some conspiracy theories on Sunday?
Game. The flu game, a.k.a. The food poisoning game, a.k.a.
I was hungover game.
which, to me, like...
That's more impressive.
If they get into it in The Last Dance and he says... Yeah, I was hungover. Like, how much
that would be so great.
How much cooler does that make Michael?
Listen, there's nobody cooler than him
how
to begin
much
with.
More, how much cooler does it make to be like,
it would
yeah,
be
you,
pretty awesome.
You were violently hungover and still played a game.
It would be pretty dope. It would be pretty awesome.
I would like it.
Did you see this yesterday that General Mills is bringing back Dunkaroos?
Yes!
Do you remember that?
Marv Albert, yes!
That snack from back in the day?
One of my favorites, easily the Dunkaroos. When I convinced my mom to buy me a pack of Dunkaroos, it was a win situation.
Absolutely.
At the local grocery.
So Dunkaroos are coming back, and I want to ask you this. What were your three favorite childhood snacks? Go back to the day, three favorite childhood snacks.
Off the top, Teddy Grahams.
I totally forgot about those.
Cinnamon or the chocolate chip version?
Cinnamon was like the yellow box, right?
No, cinnamon was red.
Oh, what was the yellow box?
Honey.
Honey. Oh, that was so good.
And
honey
the blue, I believe the blue was the chocolate. Get out of here with the chocolate. The dark chocolate ones, get out of here. Those are trash.
Yeah, those weren't good.
And then snack packs for sure.
Okay.
Snack packs
for sure. You were a snack pack
kid? Oh, I love a snack pack. Who didn't love a snack?
I always give mine away.
I could, no. You can't take it to lunch with you because it gets warm. A snack pack was a home snack.
Yeah.
It wasn't a lunch snack at school. It was a home snack.
I always use it as trade bait.
I don't, of course, because you get some fool to eat a room temperature snack pack. You want this room temperature trash? You go right ahead.
But if it started room temperature, I think it's okay.
No.
Like, I don't like going from the cold to warm.
It has to be cold.
All right,
what's
your third?
You can only have a snack pack cold. I like a good bag of Famous Amos. Not going to lie. A good bag of Famous Amos.
You're going like sweet cookie things for each and every snack?
They're snacks. They're kids' snacks. Okay. Or,
all right.
If I had to go savory, Bugles.
Bugles were good. Did you put them on your fingers?
Of course.
Do the lady fingers?
What is this? Of course.
All right. My three, I would give you Hi-C Ecto Cooler.
Oh, I didn't know we could do drinks.
Well, I went drink.
You never said we could do drinks.
My first pick was a drink. I'm giving you Hi-C Ecto Cooler. That was a hell of a drink back in the day.
Yeah, but you said snacks, not drinks.
Well, I thought it was a snack. Number two, Gushers. Gushers, I know they're still around. They were still legit when
love
I was a kid.
Love them.
My number one snack, the handy snack. Remember that with the little red stick that comes in it to spread the cheese on it?
Wine and cheese privilege.
How is that wine and cheese?
No, listen, no.
How is that wine and cheese?
It's literally cheese and crackers.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Talk to you Sunday.